Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, we skipped a week last week. I've missed you. It's nice to be back together again.
Missed you, buddy. Good to be back. So, we're back at it. You and I were just talking before the show. I think it'll be interesting today and probably for the next few weeks because I'm getting rolling with a big new product push, and you're rolling along fast and furious on a big new product from Carthook.
I think you're at the early stages of a new product, and I'm at the final stages before it actually, you know, launches and gets out there into the real world. Yeah, there's a whole load of things that come along with that. All these little decisions and micro decisions. It's a little exhausting. It's very stressful. It's hard to know if you should even be focusing on this instead of the existing service and product that's working. Is it like a shiny object syndrome that we're all very susceptible to? Is it the right strategic move? There's definitely a lot of rolling around in your head.
Yeah, I think we also have that in common where we're not starting new companies. You're still working on Carthook. I'm still working on Audience Ops, but it's like a second iteration from or a second line in the product line.
And it could be the right thing. It could be the thing that you've been in business all along just to find this thing, and that's actually the big idea that helps you take off. Or it could be a distraction and you'd be a lot further along if you just didn't do something new and focused on what worked. But we are optimistic in our nature, otherwise we wouldn't be doing these things. So one way or another, you convince yourself that the scale comes out, 51%, 49%, a little bit toward the optimistic of this is going to work. This is a good thing to do.
Yeah. So, before we really dig into what's new on that front, like what any other updates you want to share real quick before we?
Sure. I've got two. The first is I'm going away on vacation, real vacation, not like conference travel, like actual vacation with the family. Yeah. It's definitely going to involve working just because we're in these final stages. But I end up really in Michigan, up to Traverse City, Michigan. We have some really good friends from college there. We're going to meet some family there and hang out and barbecue and fish and, just get outdoors. So I kind of end up enjoying like a few hours to myself every day. I go to the coffee shop for 2-3 hours, do email. It helps focus my time. I don't have all day. I'm not just going to be standing here in front of my desk between 9 and 5 or whatever hours I end up working. So it condenses it. It kind of clarifies like, no, these are the only things that actually matter. And the rest is not worth missing out on beach time for.
Yeah, totally. Last week, we took a mini vacation for 3 days. We drove up to upstate New York where my brother and his wife have the farm that I mentioned earlier. So we visited them, saw their farm for the first time, which is pretty cool. And then we drove 2 hours further over to the Finger Lakes, where I've never spent any time there before, but it's a pretty cool area. We had a little B&B looking at the lake and did some wine tasting and spent 3 nights over there. It was a good getaway.
Wow, sounds like very normal. Very, like you actually care about yourself and your time. It's very good.
I mean, I was totally like on the laptop doing email and, working while my wife is, taking care of the two kids. So my fault
that's
on okay. that. But
that's the price of freedom. And my other update is now I can announce it now that it's in the past tense, but we raised more money.
Oh, very nice.
So we kind of loaded up the coffers to be able to focus on the long-term thinking on this new product instead of just the short-term revenue. Obviously, we're focused on revenue, but it does allow us a little bit of breathing room to make decisions a little bit more strategically, like what's the right thing to do for the 6-month time horizon or 12-month time horizon, as opposed to how do we get MRR to where it needs to be ASAP.
So is that the same amount, and is it the same investors or more? Or?
Similar amount, same investors.
Got it.
So a lot of lessons in there. One of them, write good investor updates that keep people informed on exactly what's happening. Because we definitely went through some drama and some ups and downs and a severe down, with the Shopify app episode. Being able to communicate through that and explain everything and what we're doing and why, I think is really what helped the same existing investors be confident and excited enough to re-up.
Got it. Something new on my end is this Friday notes email. Today I just sent my third third one of these. Every Friday, I'm trying to send out one of these notes. Obviously, it's inspired by, you know, the Tim Ferriss email, and I've seen it come from a couple other people.
Yeah. I read yours, and I stopped reading Tim Ferriss's.
Oh, well, there you go. I think, you know, everybody who I subscribe to who does these kind of things, you know, has different bullet points that they include. So I really enjoy doing this. So here are the bullet points that I've been including in mine. Let me just pull it up from today.
It's a funny thing when you know that there is nothing business related, even though it's a business relationship, like with your email, like I associate you with something having to do with business. And then all of a sudden I know that Friday email isn't really business related. It makes me, you know, more excited.
Yeah. And that's some of the feedback I've been getting from readers.
I'm trying to get to know you, Brian.
Yeah, I know. I'm putting more of myself out there. It's obviously, I still talk about business. And but anyway, my bullet points here are the problem that I solved recently, my upcoming goal, this week's picks, which is always a mix of like a podcast episode I heard or music I'm listening to or a book I'm reading, and then question for you to think about. And then from my archives, which I try to find like maybe an old episode of this podcast or something from my personal blog from a while back or the Audience Hops blog that's kind of relevant. And so that's all it is. I really like it for like a selfish reason, which is like it's starting to really keep myself even more accountable because I need to report. And this is the subscriber base is getting up there now. So I feel a little bit nervous sending these out every week.
Oh, that's funny.
you know, but it's been good. I've been getting a lot of good feedback and yeah, I think I'll keep going with it.
Yeah, I like it. Cool, man. So today we're going to talk about issues that have come up for us over the past few weeks with these new products. That's basically the only thing on my mind. So you tell me if you want to start.
Yeah, well, let me start with this. I mean, I actually wrote this in the email today, which is I recently decided that it's time for me to let go of the service side of Audience Ops. And obviously, that doesn't mean we're stopping it. It continues to grow. It is growing, and I still attend to it. But I've stopped actively working on it. And here's what I mean by that. Like up until just recently, for the past like 18 months or so, I've spent my full-time focus on creating the systems, building the team, and then updating the systems and our processes and making things better and improving the way that we sell it, improving the way that we deliver it, solving all the little problems and the headaches that come up. And then it got to a point where I kept doing that. I kept tweaking processes and I kept trying out new tools and I kept improving things when, you know, I didn't really need to be improving things. Like things are working pretty smoothly. And so I think that was an indicator that like I'm ready personally to start really focusing my time on what's next. You know, the big new product or products, but I'm really focusing on one right now. But it's like giving myself permission to...
Yeah, does it make you feel guilty?
Well, at first it did, but then I started to realize that, you know what, I'm still bootstrapping this and totally self-funding this. And in order for this new big product to get off the ground, it's going to require my full-time effort on it.
Yeah, first turn of the snowball.
Right. And I have to accept the fact that, you know, I'm in a pretty good position now thanks to the productized service because that's up and running. It's profitable. The team is in place and they're doing really great with it. And my basic needs are covered from this business. So I'm now freed up to focus full time on developing the new product and planning it and working with different people on it. That was kind of like the big revelation over the last like two to three weeks, I think, is giving myself that permission.
Okay, that's necessary.
To be clear, like on the service side of things, like my whole role is involves, okay, a couple sales calls and one call with my managers every other Thursday. So it's like every 2 weeks, I've got a call for an hour. We just give me an update on what's going on with clients. And then week to week, just a couple of questions that get escalated to me from my team. And I deal with those. So it's a couple of hours a week. And then the rest of the week is I'm focused on new stuff.
That's very impressive, man. That sounds like a good scenario. Yeah, I think you're doing the right thing. There's, it's unlikely that a new product is going to get off the ground in any reasonable amount of time. The best decision we made as a company over the past few months was to stop focusing on the replacement of the Shopify checkout and actually pursue the funnel functionality that we wanted. That since that day, everything has gone so much faster because we just said, okay, let's just stop splitting our attention and let's just focus on what we actually want to accomplish. And now we're almost there, maybe 6 weeks later.
Yeah, it's amazing how much just a mindset shift for you and your team just accelerates, you know, the pace, and like you're all working towards a much clearer goal rather than trying to like balance 5-6 different things.
Right, little this, little that.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you what my biggest theme over the past 2 weeks has been education. What happened over the past 2 weeks was at some point I hit a wall. I'm also going to sneeze at some point, so I'm just going to mute this, but it's going to be cool when I do. So that's the explanation for the mute.
Good to know.
Thanks. At some point, I got really frustrated at the speed, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't have the tools, the vocabulary to deal with the technical aspects. False alarm.
I was going to say, that is the weirdest looking sneeze I've ever seen.
No, it wasn't a sneeze. I was trying to look up at the sky at the light, so I'd sneeze, man. It's not okay. Happening.
Got it.
All right, bear with me. So I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to push a tech team. I didn't have the experience, the knowledge. I just didn't know what to do. And the only thing, I basically resorted to violence. I didn't know what else to do, so I started yelling.
So you took out the whip and you whipped over Skype. And
yeah, and even as I was doing it, I knew it wasn't the right thing. I just didn't know what else to do. And it was a very strange situation. I ended up being very apologetic about being overly aggressive and frustrated. And then doing it again the next day, I was in a very strange spot. I didn't know what to do. It's just one of those things. I'm not a product manager. And I don't understand the tech to the same degree as the other guys. So I felt like this rift being created between us. So it was kind of a little hairy. What ended up saving the day was this new full-time developer, Jan, that we're bringing on. He's kind of working with us part-time right now until he's able to join full-time. So he's been on our stand-ups, though, to just start getting involved. And his perspective was like an outsider's perspective. And he could almost tell us and say the things in a certain way that we couldn't to each other, because we're friends, Ben and I, and Rock and I, and it's like we're very close now. So Jan coming in and basically saying, look, the previous company, here's how we did it, and here's why it happened. And Jordan, you're not wrong that it's going slow, but it's not like Rock and Ben are working slowly. It's that the nature of this thing. And so he like came in and just helped me understand what was happening and what I should be doing with my frustration.
Well, that sounds like a really good person you got on. I mean, yeah. That's the sign of a really strong person, especially a developer. It's not just about development talent. It's your ability to communicate about it.
You know? Yes. And he was willing to be honest with me.
Yeah.
Who, you know, presumably am the boss, and kind of tell me you're not wrong, but you're a little wrong. And here's how you're wrong. And that kind of helped me understand. And so I started channeling it into more constructive things, such as we're now doing more rigid 2-week sprints. And what ends up happening is I'm in the marketing guy, so I talk to people all day. And so I bring market feedback into the conversation. The problem is I do that and then I throw a wrench into things. I get all excited about a particular feature or a functionality or what someone wants. And it's fine to do that, but people are currently working really hard on getting one thing straight that's very complex. And so we've started getting into this more rigid, like, no, I don't just throw that bomb into the mix. I put that on a list for us to talk about to then decide whether or not it's included in the next sprint. But right now there's a sprint happening. Let it happen.
Right.
Let it finish. Don't keep throwing things off.
So how does your sprint work? Like you 2-week sprints.
Yeah.
I assume like at some day, like a Friday or a Monday at the end of a sprint, you regroup and you discuss the findings, right?
Right. And we're still in the experimentation phase in terms of we don't have it down exactly to the T, like Monday through Thursday we code and then Friday we all test and then Monday. We don't have it that way. Right now we're like trying to figure out that structure. What Jan came in with was just breaking it up into a realistic segments of like, if you have a 2-week sprint, you're not building for 2 weeks. You are building for a week, you're testing for 2 days, and then you're fixing bugs and issues for those last 3 days, and that's your 2-week sprint. So that helped me be more patient and just kind of take a step back. Like, there's no sense in breaking up what's happening right now to throw in another feature. It just frustrates everyone and it slows things down. So yeah, as much as I don't want things to happen sequentially. I want things to happen at the same time, but the development needs to happen sequentially. It's this and then this and then this. So it's kind of been an education over the past few weeks in product management overall.
Yeah, totally. You know, I guess that speaks right to this like stress factor that I've been thinking about lately. And it's like for that first year and a half working on audience ops, like it wasn't all that stressful. And that's because it was working and it continues to work. And we have paying customers and you've got problems and things that you need to overcome. But okay, we need to tinker with this and restructure that process here, get a different person to come in here. But like it's working. So that's not a stressful thing. I just have things to do to make it keep working. But now that I've like launched myself back into the entrepreneurial mindset of starting a new product that does not have customers yet, that adds this whole like cloud over my head every single day of like, I'm working on something that people are not paying for yet. And that is extremely scary and stressful. And that is what pushes me to work as fast and make as much progress as I possibly can to get myself out from under that cloud as soon as possible.
Yeah, the no man's land we've talked about,
right?
Where it's like it's unhealthy to be there because you get in your own head.
Right.
So what I was going to ask you is, what are the stress points for you? Is it the validation part? Like, are people even going to want to pay for this? Like, what are the stress points? Am I distracting myself or?
Well, okay. So I've already made the decision that I'm going to work on a big new product. I've come to that conclusion that we need to have another product to grow audience ops further. So I'm okay with that decision. That's been made. I'm doing that. The question now is, what is that product? And is this product, the one that I'm working on now, is this the right thing to fill that space? And I think the stressful thing is, yeah, I guess it's the validation process, which is where I'm right in the middle of right now. But like, I've been through this several times now. And
right. Are you addressing that specifically, like to help yourself out, like to try to get validation first before you keep building?
Yeah. And I could talk through all the steps that I've been working on and what's coming up next.
I'm curious what you're doing to alleviate that stress. Because it's a healthy stress.
Yeah.
You can't just go building for the next 3 months without getting feedback.
I think part of it is, and again, this is because I'm not new at this now. It's recognizing the pieces of a new product that I have strengths that I can bring to the table and do myself. And then the pieces that I know that I'm going to need to bring others in to take care of and hire others to do. It's also knowing when to tell myself to stop and show it to somebody and get feedback. And then work a little bit more and then stop and then show it people for feedback.
Okay. So not being in isolation for too long.
Yeah. Like not getting sucked into ice. Cause there are pieces of this that I spend a lot of time personally on. Like I do a lot of design work and product specs and wireframes and mockups and marketing work. And then there's also the factor that, you know, I am self-funding this and I need to budget accordingly and I need to do things in a smart way. So I guess I can run through the process that I've gone through so far. And this was probably came out in like an episode from 2 weeks ago when I had all these ideas swirling around in my head. I kind of have a sense of what it's essentially going to be a SaaS product with a small service aspect attached to it. But I've had like all these different potential ideas for a SaaS that comes from Audience Ops and I needed to get it all out of my head. The first step of that was just writing tons and tons of notes. And then the next step was, like, I'm a visual person. I need to see what this thing would actually look like. So I took out Balsamiq and I created lots of wireframes. I iterated on those several times. I spent about, I'd say a full week to week and a half every single day working on these. So that's like a lot of hours, right? Even through a weekend, I'm so like gung-ho about this that like I'm working on a Saturday, you know?
Isn't it fun? I think the wireframing process is, I think it's fun. I draw it out by hand. I must have drawn out 100 pages by hand. Just because I don't like the balsamic thing, just drawing by hand is easier for me. But you're going through the same process with balsamic.
Yeah, I like balsamic, and so I spent many hours on this, and that whole time I know full well, and I'm saying this to myself every day, like, wow, I'm spending a lot of time on this, and it's just me right now. Nobody has seen this yet, and that is scary. There's this fear. I was just listening today to Stelly and Heaton on their podcast talking about MVPs. This isn't relating to anything that they were saying on that podcast, but just MVPs in general. There's this fear out there, I think, that people are, you know that you need to do something super, super minimal, and you don't want to work too much until you have some level of validation on things, right? But I also think that that can be a crutch, and that can stop people from actually taking action. In my case, I get the ball rolling by getting some wireframes together, and they're pretty detailed. I don't know. I guess that's just what I wanted to say. It was like, you need to do some sort of first action to get this thing out of your head and into a presentable form that you can go show to someone and say, hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah. And that comes in different forms itself. You know, I told you I've been doing a lot of Facebook group mining. And so when I see someone write about the exact problem that we are solving, you know, there are literally people in these groups saying, I'm trying to accomplish X and I can't find a tool. And then there are like 20 comments underneath it that are like, yeah, me too. How do you do it? How do I do it? Who's going to fix it? So I reach out to those people. And for me, even just the explanation, like the two paragraphs explaining what we're doing, is a little bit of validation. That's like the first level. Where it's like, oh, that doesn't make sense for me, or oh, that sounds really interesting. Can you tell me more about how this part of it works?
In my case, I'm trying the new product is essentially aimed at solving the same problem that we've been solving with Audience Ops. So in that sense, I do know that there are companies that need to do content marketing, and they don't know how, or they don't have the tools or the people to do it.
Right. So it's not a shot in the dark. Totally.
Right. Like my goal here is to create a better, more efficient way of solving the same problem. Okay, so that was step one. I made those wireframes, spent about 10 days on them. And at that point, and they weren't even finished. There were plenty of screens that were like, all right, I'm just not going to spend time on that. I had to just tell myself, okay, stop. It's at a good enough point that I can send it to someone. And so I said, stop, I need to get feedback on this. So my next step was, sent out an email to 20, 25 friends, people I've, met in person, people I consider friends now, and we talk on a regular basis, people I trust who are doing this sort of thing, who I know will give me some critical feedback. That's what I was seeking. I sent that email out to all of them with the wireframes. I created a video to walk through and just talk through my thinking behind this, to kind of present it. Not like this wasn't like a marketing explainer video at this point. This was like, hey, check out this thing I'm working on. Here's what I'm thinking. I need help.
Yeah, but you worked hard on it. It's not crappy. I've seen it.
Yeah,
it's good. So you put the time into it to actually see.
Yeah, because I
to gauge like real reaction.
Yeah, I really want to get the full vision across. So the other thing that I should say about this is that I put all the thoughts that were in my head about this new product into these wireframes, all the features, the whole set. Like, and this is not going to be the MVP. This is not even going to be version one. You know, this is just to get the vision out of my head and into something tangible. Mm-hmm. A big part of sending it around for feedback was, and one of the questions I asked was, you know, tell me like which part looks most interesting, what's not interesting, or put another way, what would you include in version one? You know, I'm trying to see like where I should start with this thing. I sent that email about, I don't know, 10 days ago. And then I, I went on that vacation upstate New York, and I processed a ton of really helpful feedback from people. I'm still in the process now of replying to everyone.
Yeah, being honest with people when you give that type of feedback is so critical, because it's so easy to just be nice to your friend, and hopefully the people that responded back to you with it were able to be critical and you know, help you.
Yes, and they were, and I really, really appreciate that. And I know how busy everyone is, and I'm always hesitant to ask for people's time like this, but and sorry, my dog is freaking out back there. So okay, so I got a lot of good feedback. Most of it pointed to, okay, this thing is too big and not focused enough. And I kind of agreed with that. I stripped some things out of the scope and refocused it. Okay, so now my next step, and this took me all of last week, I created an explainer video. It comes in now at about 90 seconds. I bought a quick course on Udemy, like how to use Keynote to do some animation stuff in a explainer video. I knew ScreenFlow pretty well. I got a music track on Audio Jungle. I did the voiceover myself. I put the blanket over my head to get the good audio around here. And like my neighbor is walking by, thinks I'm a total crazy person, but that's okay. And so I got that out the door. I probably spent 3 or 4 full working days on producing that. Again, a little bit freaking out because I'm putting all this work into something that's still, you know, I would not consider like totally validated yet. Anyway, I put that together. I put it up on a landing page. I used our landing pages plugin, which made that really easy at least. And then, so I created this landing page, which I'm not going to share with the audience today because my next step for next week is we're running some Facebook ads to some targeted cold audiences. People like not retargeting audiences. So people who have not necessarily heard of me or heard of Audience House before.
Okay. And where are you driving them? To the video?
Yeah. To that landing page, which has the video on it.
Just to see total strangers. What are they, how do they react?
Total strangers. See if they will opt in for early access. And then on the back end, on the success page, there's a survey, and it's like a long survey. It's like probably like 20 questions. So I want to get their responses to those questions. And then those people who fill out the survey, I will reach out and try to talk to on calls.
Okay. Yeah. You got a bunch of steps to go.
Yeah. you very early on. Yeah. So cool. I have our marketing guy on the team at Audience Ops. So he's going to be managing those Facebook ads. That's usually an area like talking about something where it's just not my thing. Like I know the basics, but really to run Facebook ads, you need somebody who just really lives and breathes that stuff. So Jeff is going to be handling that for the next week and making some adjustments. And then we'll, I'll look at the results of that. So that's really the next step, is to get feedback from cold audiences. But then the other thing that's I'm not pulling the trigger on yet, but I'm starting to talk to people, is finding a developer. And I'm trying to figure out the best way to do this, on a budget, but also balance with, okay, this thing needs, we need to make the right tech decisions. We need to not cause huge problems down the road. So what I'm leaning towards is some combination of a North America, US-based CTO type person, not a CTO partner, but just someone to consult, maybe just for like a 1 month, maybe 1 or 2 month basis to help me make high level decisions. And then, outsource the ongoing coding development work, probably to an offshore development shop. I'll probably seek an agency, I think, to just have reliability and consistency on that. And I expect that to be, long-term, 6 to 12 months, month-to-month retainer kind of thing. Spend a few months on that. And if there are users and then if there are customers, obviously we keep going. And if it really grows, then I look into really building a dev team and CTO. But the early on, I'm just looking at ways to self-fund and bootstrap this.
All right. Very interesting. So it'll be, right now you're playing with fantasy. How would this feature be? And then at some point when it turns into reality, then you have to start making compromises with, okay, so this should not be in scope for version 1. And this should, because it's critical and it's the key piece of value. And this is tangential, so it gets held off. And damn software. It's it's this imaginary stuff on the internet, but it's very real in terms of building it and the compromises you need to make away from what your ideal is.
Yeah. And actually, an idea that I took from you, we were talking about on the show, I think last time, is this idea of like an inner circle customers group, right? So there will be an early access list and all those people will be invited to use it in beta. But even before that, I want to find around 10 customers. And I already have a list of about 5 just from people that I've been emailing privately. But I want to build this up to about 10 who are, they'll be like the pre-sell group. Probably ask them to pre-sell, you know, a couple of months of the service and or the software. And I'm going to be going to them on a weekly basis or so to get feedback on screenshots and features while we build them and what should we build next, or is this ready or is it not ready, what's missing. And they'll be the kind of the mastermind for this new product and because they'll be users of it. So
yeah, I don't know what I would do without that. I feel like that's like, I don't know if other people see it as critical. I just don't know. I wouldn't know any other way to do it other than just getting people in the door early who are super interested in getting the feedback. Everything you're talking about sounds familiar from like, you know, a few months ago. And so we're just on the other side of the tunnel. We see the light. We're almost there. Now all those micro decisions that you put off because they're not critical in the early phases now are actually being decided. And it's stressful because these things seem like little micro decisions. Like to you, pricing is a big decision. In reality, you're just putting a number on the site and that is your pricing. Like all the thought that goes on to it, you just decide what to put on there. But it's that, and another decision is when to take credit cards. Should you take it at sign up? Should you take it at launch? Should you have the two-step sign up? So you create an account, first screen, second screen is the credit card, so that if they go between step one and step two and abandon, then you send them effectively what are abandoned card emails for software. It's like all these micro decisions are very stressful because they feel like they can have a big impact on the company, but you just have to decide. So it's actually really hard. So
yeah. Where are you at on that? Like in terms of, curious, so you have some customers and people interested, like did they prepay or at least give their credit card, or how are you thinking about that?
No. So the only people who have paid for it were the people on the webinar who pre-purchased.
Got it.
And so everyone else, we've just lent in without credit card just to get feedback.
Got it.
But now we're actually...
But you do have people who've paid. Like, so that's...
Yes.
Like people have paid to solve this problem.
Yes. But now it's... New marketing site is coming out next week, and along with it, all the details of the pricing and how it works and all that. So my team kind of loses their mind from hearing me like, so can we just talk about pricing again real quick one last time? They that sentence they really would prefer never to hear ever again. But I'm trying to go as simple as possible. Basically, the explanation of this product is difficult enough, so I'm trying to keep everything else simple. So we're starting out with one pricing tier. You could do monthly or annual, but just one tier. Even though I think mathematically it's smarter to have multiple tiers and charge more for people who make more.
Yeah, and price anchoring and that sort of stuff.
Right, but we can always do that later. Right now, it's just whatever requires the least explanation. So we're doing one pricing tier at $97 a month. And then we're taking the credit card. Don't quote me on this because it might change between now and the time we launch it. But I think we're going to do the two-step registration.
So sign up and then start using the app. And then when...
No. What you do is your sign up form is 2 pages. The first page is just email and password. And then you submit that. So we capture your email address. And then the second page is credit card information. And so some people will drop off, and then that at least helps you measure the number of people who are dropping off because of the credit card requirement. So at least that gives you an indicator like, okay, if we took the credit card requirement out, we kind of know how many people we would get in, because everyone who finished step one would have been a free trial account.
Got it.
Right.
Got
so it. Yeah. It helps you measure that way. There's a bunch of companies that do it. If you go to Drip, Right now, go to getdrip.com and go to sign up. You'll see step one, email password, step two. And then if you complete step one but don't complete step two, you should expect an email about an hour later.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Saying, hey, what happened? Basically an abandoned cart email for software.
Right. And are you doing a free trial? Or
we are doing a free trial, but one of the biggest mistakes we made with the cart abandonment product was that we didn't require a credit card up front. That, I think, was the right move because of the nature of the product. But then when the free trial ended, that was like the first time we actually asked for a credit card. So the thinking behind it was, hey, we want you to make money, and then every week we tell you how much money you're making, and at the end, we're telling you this is how much money you've made. If you want to keep going, put in your credit card. And that worked when there were like 20 trials a month, because there would be like, they call it 10 successful people, and we could manage that. Now that there's so many more trials, we can't follow up individually. And so if those like two or three emails go by, we kind of lost them even though they had a successful trial. So I'll reach out to them like 2 weeks later saying, hey, what happened? I never got your credit card info. And they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry, I meant to sign up, but we're not following up
that way. Yeah, it's just a second action they have to take.
And exactly, yeah. Right. It's a proactive action. I've and it should be the opposite. Right. It should be you need to proactively cancel before you get charged, not right. You need to proactively put in your credit card before you get charged.
Yes.
So that was a painful lesson learned. So that's
but,
like,
you know, but you have to balance that with what you learn about the sign up process, right? Like what if removing the credit card triples the number of trials you get? You know, then it's like you got to look at it.
Right. And you also have to think internally. You have to think, what can we handle internally? Is my fear is that without credit card required for sign up, we're just going to get a bunch of people who want to see what the hell we're talking about because this is a unique product. And so we're going to end up spending a lot of our time helping people get set up, answer questions, all that for people who are not good prospects that are not going to turn to paying customers anyway.
Yep.
So that's a little scary.
I do always default to ask for the credit card up front.
Right. Yeah. There's one way that's a little clever way to do it, where you basically let people sign up and register and get set up, but then you require a credit card at the point of value. So for us, it's when you launch your first funnel. So if you've gone in, you've connected your Shopify store, you've set up your funnel, you've connected your payment processor, you've done all this work, you're so invested and committed. Then when you go to launch your funnel, that's when you get the pop-up saying you need to put your credit card information in. I think that would work. I don't know what to call it. It's not, forget being nice. It might be annoying or not ideal.
Yeah. Well, actually, one thing on the technical aspect, this is really a question that tech people would know the answer to that I don't. But like you probably want to set it up in a way that's easy to test and switch strategies. Because I like back in Restaurant Engine, we had our registration process set up in a way that like in order to, I think we were able to change prices easily, but if we wanted to change models, like that required redeveloping the whole registration process.
Right.
You know,
my experience has been once you put those things in, they don't get changed that often. Yeah. So you kind of want to just leave it for a while because it's not realistic to be like, oh, we'll just change it real quick in 2 weeks because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. But you're gonna get
too busy.
On the onboarding stuff, I think I talked about how with those mockups that I was working on, I designed the onboarding screens first before anything else because I feel like that informs the rest of the app. And the way that I set it up, or my thinking at this point, I'm sure this will change 10 times before it's even built, but the very first screens is like you start to work on setting up your goals and key settings. So I think it's something like, you know, what are your traffic goals and your conversion goals? And then those are saved. And the next step, what's your publishing plan? And those are saved. And then next step and like not inviting teams, but like what does your team roles look like? And so you're putting all this work and you're building this profile, but it hasn't even asked you for your name and email yet. And then that's like kind of the final step is like put your name and email in and then ask for the credit card details. And then you're dropped into the app, which is the same kind of view because it's built around a timeline view. So like you're still in that timeline view, and at the bottom of the timeline were those onboarding steps that you had started. So like you've already done some work. Like it takes a minute or two to get up to the point of registering.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I think it's hard to accomplish technically. And right, you want to get people to the aha moment as soon as possible, right? That's the saying. So if you can start that on the front end before they even register, that, I mean, that's awesome. In my mind, it sounds overly complicated, but if Probably. You can get it done technically.
Yeah. And it might even be too many hurdles for a person to get started. Like I'm designing it in a way to be kind of valuable and get them into the app and drawing them in. But a bit of the feedback that I've had from people is like, I was a little confused by some of those questions.
Right. Just show me the damn thing already.
Show it to me. Yeah.
Yep. So, yep. I like doing it in that way where you have your onboarding flow that you want people to go through, but you don't lock them out of other screens. We want people to connect their Shopify store first thing. But if someone wants to come in and see what the funnel screen looks like, let's let them click on it. And then when you go to add your first funnel, it says you need to connect your Shopify store, and it kicks you back into the loop back around to where we want you to go.
I mean, another thing that I'm thinking about though is it's not like onboarding should not just be a tour of like, here's where you do this and here's where you do that. And it should be productive. You should be doing things. And so I'm building it in a way that like the things that you're setting in these very first couple of steps are like your goals, and those goals will be entered into the goal tracking system. And so like you're making progress toward, you know, you're doing something with it.
You're also learning how to use it by actually using it as opposed to looking. Yeah. I don't look at those tours at all.
No. Yeah. Me neither.
Yeah. Sometimes what happens is I want that tour back after I've played with it for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, that's, but not at first. Just let me see the thing.
Yeah. The other thing that I read an article recently, I forgot where it was, but the idea that dashboards are kind of like app dashboards tend to be kind of a wasteland of useless features and buttons and links to things that nobody ever uses. So people just throw them in the dashboard and then that dashboard is the very first thing that every user sees when they log in. So my thinking there is just don't have a dashboard. And make the default screen like the most useful screen of the app, whatever that is. Like,
okay,
I'm thinking around this like timeline view. You know, it's different for every app, but
right, could be your calendar, like because that's home base,
right?
To see what's coming up and what just got done, what needs to get done this week. Yeah, for us it is revenue based, so I think we'll end up with the dashboard as the default, just because we want that. That provides more value to them and makes us more valuable to them, as opposed to directly into the, you know, the funnel screen or something like that. But yeah, but I hear what you're saying.
Cool. Well, so what's next for you guys? What is your next step as you're getting toward making this thing a reality?
Yeah, it is staying completely focused on this sprint and this set of features. And not letting anything come up that throws us off. The way I phrased it to the team was, on September 1st, I want 10 people to be able to sign up and become paying customers. So whatever that means for your particular realm that you're responsible in, make sure you think through everything that's required. So if that means someone needs to get to the marketing site, so that needs to be done. They need to be able to sign up, so that needs to be done. Give us their credit card information, so that needs to be connected. Set up their funnel, set up their Shopify store, connect, build, launch, sell something for 14 days, and then turn into a paying customer. So every one of those steps has a million things that like come off of it. So think through all of those things, but on September 1st, you pass the baton from tech and product to marketing. And if I start sending customers in because I'm doing my job on the marketing front and they can't sign up and they can't, it doesn't work, whatever, then now we have a problem. So you got plenty of time. On this particular date, make sure 10 people can come in and sign up and become paying customers. Whatever that means to you, get it done.
Yeah. Yep. And of course, you know, it's if you're not a little bit embarrassed by your first version, you launched too late, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I have that written down in my notes to talk about today, like launching ugly versus launching ready. And I'm with you. My default is always launch ugly. But this has been, again, another kind of learning experience in the nature of this product where,
you know. I mean, for the first 10 customers, it could just be, look, the thing works. We've tested it and you can go through the whole flow, but you're probably going to be hand-holding those first 10 customers anyway. So if they get hung up or if some bug pops up that you couldn't foresee, you could manually get them past it.
Yes. For us, there's a split. The consumer-facing piece where people land and put their credit card in and buy and see upsell pages and see thank you pages, that needs to actually be solid and not ugly. The internal piece of our actual app that they interact with, bunch of shit's going to be wrong and features are going to be missing, and that matters less. So it's like we got to get the consumer-facing part right. That you can't skimp on. But our app itself, it's all about, no, we can't do recurring upsells, that's later. No, we can't do PayPal with upsells, that's a little later. And that's the ugly part. That's fine. Yeah, so now it's just coordination. It's getting the marketing site done right around the same time that the UI and UX update is done. And all these different things just kind of happen at the same time.
Yeah. Well, for me, to keep myself accountable in public here, let's see, September 1st, I like that as a good date. The way I'm thinking about that date is, by then, I should have learned quite a bit from these cold Facebook campaigns, which are starting up on Monday. I may or may not fully launch the landing page and video to the wider audience by then. I might, but I should be getting more and more feedback between now and then, and that should help me decide whether or not September is the month that I'm ready to start pulling the trigger and spending money on developers and getting the very first bits, like breaking ground on it.
Okay.
That would happen in September if the feedback allows me to keep going.
Right. If you're not too far off, basically.
Right. If it's a total, I mean, the initial feedback I've already had is already pointing in that direction. Like four people have said, like, I'll be a customer of this already. That's just verbal. That's not totally valid
that's
yet.
Good start.
So it's pointing in that direction. I think we've got a lot of work to do and I still need to be a little bit, I need more reassurances. So that'll be between now and September 1st.
All right. Nice, man. So by the time next time we talk, I think we will probably have been launched because we won't be doing an episode next week because I will be drunk on a boat somewhere in Michigan.
As you should.
Yep. all right. Cool, man. Well, good catching up. Good luck in your endeavor in the next step.
All right, buddy.
And hopefully cardhub.com is an updated site by the next time we talk.
Yeah, I had a look at that thing. It looks pretty slick.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right, guys.
All right, be good.
Later.